WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, we're going to have a double billing. I'm going to start things off because I understand some listeners liked candy. So I'm going to play a double billing of episode 10. Candy Matson would be the 10th episode, The Movie Company. And then later on in the program, for the second half of the show, I'm going to play episode 10, Frontier Gentlemen. Skipped around on those because I don't... There's just some in there that are really poor quality. Some in the series. And anyway, back to Natalie Parks. It's Candy Matson. The original air date for this episode was the 29th of August, 1950. This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, and or WMFO.org.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Heat that baby on the tree.
Fix those dolly tracks.
And look out for that cable, it's hot.
Mallard, what in the name of the San Francisco Police Department are you doing up here on Telegraph Hill?
Working, Candy, in the name of the San Francisco Police Department.
Here, with these people who are making the movie?
Yeah, how about that? Me, a lieutenant in homicide, and I'm assigned to riding herd on these Hollywood characters.
Oh, it's better than murder.
I'll take murder any day. What are you doing around here?
I did some shopping at Speedy's this morning while I was pinching the avocados. They told me that there was a Hollywood gang over by Coit Tower shooting some scenes for a movie with a San Francisco background.
They might just as well have stayed in the studio. They brought their own lawns, prop trees, fake bushes, the works. If it ever snowed up here on Telegraph Hill, they'd have brought some of that along, too.
You've never worked in Hollywood, Mallard. Only God can make a tree, but Hollywood presumes to improve on them. What are they doing now?
Just getting ready to shoot a scene, I think.
Oh.
They've been rehearsing it all morning.
Mm-hmm. What's it all about, you know?
As far as I can figure, it's a story about San Francisco right after the gold rush. Look at all the costumes.
Very authentic. Looks like they'd been shipped around the horn. By the way, Mallard, do you know who's in the picture?
Some lush tomato named Cherry Dana and a Colorado boy, Buff Arnold.
Arnold? Did you say Buff Arnold?
That's right. Why?
Oh, forgive me, Mallard, dear. I knew Buff Arnold when he didn't have a place to house in. He professed to carry a very warm torch for me.
Aha! Uh-huh. So that's why you so casually dropped by.
Oh.
An old flame, huh?
Don't be ridiculous. I didn't even know the guy was here, let alone stealing pictures.
A likely story.
All right, quiet, please. Let's have quiet.
Quiet. This is a take.
All set, Mr. Dix. We're ready.
Good. Okay, Cherry, we'll roll this one. Take a chance on it. Just remember to keep up against those trees. We don't want any shots of those modern buildings below the hill.
I'll remember, Ed.
Where is my old pal, Buff Arnold, Mallard, dear?
By me. Judging by what's been going on, he's not in this particular scene.
Mm-hmm. All right, stand by. Roll him.
Scene 47, take 10.
Oh.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Cut, cut. Oh, where's that coming from?
Out on the bay, Mr. Dix.
Fine thing, a present-day steamer whistle and an 1850 picture. Hold it. Ames.
Yes?
Let me know when the fool ship is tied up. We won't shoot the scene until it's docked.
Yes, sir. Oh,
darn it, I was hoping I'd see some action.
Well, I'll give you some action. Come on, walk around with me, Candy. I'll show you all the sights.
Sights like what, for instance, Mallard?
Oh, all the lights they brought up here. I must have 1,000 of them.
Undoubtedly to wash out the wrinkles on the leading lady's face.
And talk about props. It must have taken a whole freight train to get them up here.
Well, I have to have them.
For instance, look, right up there.
Hmm? Where, Mallard?
Up there, above. In that tree, hanging by their necks.
Oh, Mallard!
Don't jump like that, Cupcake. Oh. They're only dummies hanging from those ropes.
Three of them. They look so realistic.
I must admit, they really do. I understand they use them in a scene where they recreate a lynching in Portsmouth Square.
Recreate, did you say?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. Take another look, honey bun. A good look at the one in the middle.
What are you trying to... Fry me for lard. That one in the middle is no dummy.
You're no dummy either, boy of mine. How many times have you looked up there?
Just a couple of times, but the last time I looked, the one in the middle wasn't an ex-human being.
With that, I toss the whole thing in your lap, Mallard. I promote you back to homicide.
Oh, why didn't these characters stay in Hollywood?
It is a bit of a shame, isn't it? Cluttering up our lovely Telegraph Hill trees with gently swaying corpses. Come on, Mallard. Let's give the director a slight touch of apoplexy.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
It's funny how sometimes when you're lazy and want to do nothing except live the good, pure life, trouble comes up and belts you over the head with a vengeance. Well, that's the way it happened to me. I'd just finished a deal. It took me 3 weeks to crack. I made some good money out of it, banked it, and sat back to relax. When I heard about the movie company on location on the other side of the hill, my curiosity got the better of me. As of that moment, my contemplated relaxation was at an end. Period. Paragraph. I literally walked right into trouble because there was Mallard and cut down.
Okay, Mr. Dix. Take a good look at him. You recognize the Jack?
I recognize him, yes, but I don't know him. He was one of the extras we used in a scene yesterday.
Did he come up from Hollywood with you?
I'm pretty sure he didn't. I think he was hired here locally. Wait a minute. Who's this young lady? I don't want any outsiders in on this.
Don't fret your little head, Mr. Dix. Aside from being a material witness, she's a well-known private investigator.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know.
That's all right. No need to apologize. Some of my best friends are movie directors.
Who would keep the roster on your personnel?
My assistant, Bill Ames.
Is he around?
Well, I'm right here, Lieutenant.
Oh, good. Can you give us any dope on this fellow?
Oh, golly, I'm afraid not. I've seen him, but I wouldn't know his name from Adam.
How about the payroll? When do you pay off the extras?
Yeah, that's a thought.
We pay off at 5 o'clock tonight.
Why don't we come back then, Mallard? We can check off the names against the pay vouchers. There's one thing extras like to do, and that's get paid. The name that doesn't show up is our friend the corpse.
Okay, we'll let it go like that. What do you pay off?
Room 873, Montfair Hotel.
Make sure everybody's there, unless they want a little trouble thrown at them. I'm sorry, Mr. Dix. You can go on with your shooting now.
No more today. It's too unnerving. Ames, knock it off. Call will be for 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, sharp.
Right, Chief.
Break it up, everybody. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, in costumes. And that means 8 o'clock, understand?
Do you mind waiting here for a moment, Candy? I want to put in a call to the coroner's office for a wagon.
Sure, that's all right. Go ahead.
Good. It'll only be a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dix, pardon me.
Yes?
Can you tell me where Buff Arnold is staying?
What do you want with Buff Arnold, young lady?
I used to know him when he was playing bit parts in Hollywood.
Oh. Did you work in Hollywood?
I did a little time down there, sitting around in agents' offices.
You know, you're a sharp little cookie. Say, all of a sudden I've got an idea.
I'll bet.
No. On the level, believe me. I have a small part coming up that'd fit you to a T. Good-looking gal, wise, supposed to work in her father's store selling supplies to the miners. Can you act at all?
I used to shoot a fairly sharp mess of dialogue.
Do you live close by?
Right over there, one block. Penthouse on the top.
All the better. A as soon as your policeman friend removes the deceased there, why don't we go over to your place and look at the script?
You know something? I've got an idea. That's the idea you had the idea about. Okay, I'll look at the script. But for your information, Mr. Dix, I'm interested only in playing a part in your picture. Mallard came back, and I told him what had developed with Dix. He shot me a look that had more question marks in it than a government income tax form. I assured him I could handle the situation, and he left with the body, still clad in its 49er prospector's outfit. Dix issued some final orders, took me by the arm, and we strolled over to my place.
Charming, but positively charming.
Thank you.
What a gorgeous view. How long have you lived here, Miss... now, isn't that silly? I don't even know your name.
Matson. Candy Matson.
Candy Matson. Never have I heard a name match a personality so completely. I'm Reginald Dix. Just call me Reg.
As you say, Reg. Would you like a drink?
Oh, splendid. Soda highball?
I think I can scrape one together.
This is absolutely enchanting. I'm going to ask to make all my pictures in San Francisco from now on.
I don't think you'd go wrong. Of course, it'd be a little rough if you were making a picture with an Indian background and needed shots of the Taj Mahal and the Himalayas.
Oh, simple. I'd change it to the Ferry Building and Twin Peaks.
Very good. Here you are, Reg.
Thank you. I can use this after that messy discovery up there on that tree. Well, here's to crime.
That's a charming toast. Now then, about this part you were speaking of, I don't even belong to the Screen Actors Guild anymore.
Oh, mere detail. I'll call the studio tonight and have them arrange your membership.
As simple as that. You know, I think if some of your bright boys got together, you could win the war in Korea without half trying.
Let's not be snide, my dear.
Oh, excuse me a moment. Someone at the door.
Certainly. Whoever it is, though, send them away.
Yes, master.
Hi.
Hi. But now that we've established our highs, is there something I can do for you?
I'm Cherry Dana. Is Mr. Dix here?
Oh, why, yes. Would you wait here, please?
I will not wait here. I want in.
Now, just a minute.
There you are, Ed. You have a short memory, haven't you?
Cherry, what are you doing here? I'm having a conference.
So I see.
I hate to mention it, but this happens to be a private home, Miss Dana. I'll have to ask you to leave.
Don't be boring. You lured my director up here, and I'm going to see that some little local wench doesn't put the squeeze play on him.
Why, you pampered brat. Get out of here right now, or I'll show you how a local wench can back up words with action.
Oh, now hold on here, both of you. Cherry, I resent this intrusion just as much as Miss Matson does, I'm sure.
I'll bet. What about me? You said you were going to drive me back to the hotel.
Very well, it slipped my mind. I'm sorry, Candy. I dislike scenes of this sort. We'll discuss our business later.
Good. I find now that I'm extremely interested. Good afternoon, Miss Dana. I'll see you later. I was so mad I was boiling. If I'd been a thermometer, quicksilver would have been streaming out of my ears. I did the most natural thing, took a shower, and little by little I simmered down. Actors and actresses are like anybody else. Most of them are darn nice people just trying to make a living, but one ham like Cherry Dana can ruin the picture. Just as I was getting dressed, the Ferry Building siren blew its top, indicating 4:30. I had to step on it if I was going to be at the Montfair at 5 in time for the payroll sequence with the extras. So I stepped on it and found myself in a minor mob scene outside room 873 at the Montfair Hotel. Mallard spotted me, grabbed me by the arm, and took me inside the room.
I really didn't expect to see you, Candy.
Why not?
I thought perhaps you were discussing contract terms with Dix by now. Big Hollywood star and all that.
Oh, Mallard, cut it out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. As I call out your names, step up fast and sign the voucher. Anderson, Robert, Apperson, Lou,
yeah.
Bennett, Bert, Beverly.
I studied the faces as they stepped by the cashier's table set up in the room. They were all types. Anyone could have been a villain, a dance hall girl, a hero, an ingenue, or just plain extra. The roll call droned on in the background. The whole thing took about 10 minutes. And suddenly, we were alone. Ames, the assistant director, the girl who had done the actual paying, Mallard, and myself.
Well, that's it.
Who's missing, Ames?
You're in for a bit of a shock.
How do you mean?
Nobody's missing. Everybody listed on our payroll, checked in, and was paid off.
What?
That's right.
Did you recognize every person who had been paid off?
I'm pretty sure I did.
Well, this is a fine kettle of nothing. We have an extra who's working in the picture, and yet he isn't. So he ends up hanging by his neck from a tree on Telegraph Hill. Who was the Joker?
The Joker, the one you can play wild. Are you sure they're all paid?
Well, positive. Double-checked with their guild cards and signatures.
Well, isn't this cute?
Oh, excuse me, please. Hello? Yes, this is Ames. Oh, yes, Cherry. What? He's what? Great Scott.
What's the matter, Ames? What is it? You're white as a sheet.
Dix. He's just been found shot to death in his room.
From San Francisco, the National Broadcasting Company is presenting Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
WMFL, 91.5 FM, Medford.
Reginald Dix, well-known Hollywood director, shot dead in his hotel room. We were looking for developments. We got them, but not the kind we expected. Mallard led the way up to the suite that Dix had been occupying on the top floor. There was a mob around the door, and my boy Mallard soon dispersed them and instituted some semblance of order. Dix was sprawled out on the balcony overlooking the bay, and an ever-widening pool of blood showed that he'd been hit in the chest. Cherry Dana was pacing the room, smoking a cigarette. Ames stood in the middle with his jaw flapping. And who should be in the room, too, but my old pal from my days in Hollywood, Buff Arnold.
Candy. Candy Matson. What a place for a reunion.
Yes, isn't it? How are you, Buff?
Ill. Terribly ill. If I have to step into the other room, I hope you'll understand. Reg was a great friend of mine.
Sure, let's go in the bedroom. You look sort of green. Besides, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you, Buff.
It's a deal. Anything to get out of here, let's go.
Wait a minute, Candy. Who is this guy?
Buff Arnold, Mallard, the fellow I was speaking about.
Where were you going?
In there. He doesn't feel too good. The closest he's ever been to blood is a bottle of ketchup in color.
Okay. Don't let him out of your sight. I have a flock of questions and need a flock of answers.
As you say, Mallard, dear.
And don't get carried away yourself.
This the bedroom?
Yeah.
Well, Buff, you seem to be doing all right.
A lot different than when I knew you in Hollywood, Candy.
You look swell, Buff. Too darn swell.
What do you mean?
You bring back too many memories.
You look mighty good yourself, Candy. You're no longer a plump little kid just out of high school. You're downright pretty, gal.
In the good old days, I'd have jumped through hoops to hear you say that.
Got any hoops handy? I'll say it again.
No soap.
Maybe we could revive some of those memories, Candy.
Not a chance, Buff Boy. Things have changed. Hollywood and everyone in it, including you, are a part of a dim, sad past. And instead of just plain Buff, that's a rebuff.
Very cute. I haven't heard the gag pulled since yesterday.
Tell me, did you hear about the body that was found on Telegraph Hill this morning?
I sure did. Now, poor Reg. I told him this picture had a jinx on it before we left the studio. Little things have happened right from the start.
Like what?
Well, in the first place, I wasn't even supposed to be in the picture. They were going to give it to some new kid as a build-up. A week before the first day of shooting, he up and disappeared. He hasn't been heard from since, when they shoved me into the breach. Then the assistant director tripped and fell off a catwalk, broke both legs. He had to be replaced.
Anything else, Buff?
Yeah. About that time, Cherry Dana whipped herself into a batch of temperament and walked off the lot. Held up production a week. Then the luggage for San Francisco was rerouted somewhere else. Never has caught up with us. Now the body this morning and Dix just now.
Certainly sounds like a jinx. By the way, how do you and the great Cherry get along, Buff?
Fine. I try not to see her except on the set. Come here, Candy. Let me hold you in my arms once, just once. I want the feel of someone who's truly genuine.
You're still just a little boy, aren't you, Buck?
Okay, Arnold, I'd like to, Well, pardon me. I hate to break this up, but I want to talk to you, Mr. Arnold.
That was a fine time Mallard picked to walk in. And then I got to thinking, maybe it was a fine time. He was due to have a little fire set under him. As I walked out into the other room, the boys in blue had arrived, and they were swarming all over the place. Ames was no longer present, neither was Cherry Dana. I wasn't going to give Mallard the satisfaction of an explanation, so I eased out the door and went down to the lobby. I asked where Ames was staying and went back up to his room, 672. A knock on the door produced results.
Just a moment.
Oh, Miss Matson. Something you wanted?
Yes, may I come in?
Why, Yes. I was just lying down. This thing about Reg has knocked me for a complete loop.
It seems to be quite a shock to everybody. You've been with Reginald Dix for a long time, haven't you, Ames?
Well, off and on, yes. A good number of years.
How about La Dana?
Cherry? Hmm. Oh, I've known her extremely well, even before she became a top-flight star.
Can you give me any idea who might have had it in for Dix? If you can, you better spill. The truth will come out sooner or later, Ames. It always does in things of this sort.
I've only one little thing I can tell. I've already told it to your lieutenant friend.
Oh? And what's that?
As I got back from Telegraph Hill, I dropped by Reg's suite. Wanted to talk about tomorrow's shooting. As I drew near his door, I heard loud arguing.
Arguing? Who were the opponents?
Reg and Cherry Dana.
Mm-hmm. And what were they arguing about, Ames?
You.
So that's it. Tell me, is Cherry the kind of woman who would turn killer on an impulse?
It's hard to say. She has a terrible temper.
Mm-hmm. Does Buff Arnold fit into the picture in any way?
I don't know. He's a sly one, that Arnold. He plays his cards in strictly a commercial manner. May fit into the picture. He and Reg were never too friendly.
I see. Well, thanks, Amesy. I'll leave now. And you'd better lock your door. The way things are going, you might wake up to find yourself dead. I went up to Cherry Dana's suite, but I drew a blank there, no answer. So I went back to the scene of the murder. Dix's room's on the top floor. Mallard was just leaving. He shot me a look that would have knocked out a North Korean tank at 1,000 yards and started to brush on by me, but I would have none of it. Now, just a moment, boy Blue. Come on back to that over 21 level. Just because Buff had his arms around me is no sign we were playing a scene from Romeo and Juliet.
I don't think I've seen that close a grip even in professional wrestling.
Oh, cut it out. What'd you turn up in there? Anything at all?
No, not a thing. Can't even find the murder weapon.
Got any ideas?
Lots of them. We've already taken Miss Dana into custody.
I had a hunch it was leading in that direction.
Incidentally, did you ever hear of a Christopher Seema? He's been a bookie around town here for several years.
Christopher Seema? No, can't say I have. Why?
Well, he was the boy who was hanging from the tree. Oh. According to our files, he dabbled in everything from gambling to blackmail.
Seema. Seema, that name rings bells somehow, Mallard.
One other thing. This isn't personal, you understand.
Yeah.
But stay away from Buff Arnold. We've got our eye on him, too.
Little things were suddenly clicking way back in my mind. Awfully vague, but the old processes from years before were coming to life ever so slowly. Mallard had work to do, plenty of it, down at the Hall of Justice, work in which I was included out. I went outside on California Street, watched him get into a squad car with two of his men, and I waved him a goodbye. That was when I had another idea. Dix's suite. Cops were through with it. The body'd been removed. But I had a hunch that was the key to the situation. Knowing the manager of the Montfair, it was no trouble at all to get a key to Reg's suite, and that's where I headed, up to the top floor. I let myself into the darkened room, closed the door behind me. With the lights of the city way below seeping through the balcony window, I found a place in back of the settee and sat down to wait and think. The balcony window being open, the roar of the city traffic underneath came gently through and helped my thinking. That's when it hit me. Seema. Several years before I had served my term in Hollywood, there was an actress named Vivian Seema. Same face as that of Cherry Dana. Now the clouds were beginning to lift, and at the same time, the door opened in the suite and the silhouetted figure of a man entered the room.
Blast the luck.
Okay, Buff. Relax.
What the...
This is Candy. Come on over here by the settee. Hurry, I'm expecting company.
What are you doing here, Candy?
You've got the wrong page of the script. That's my line. What are you doing here, Buck?
Honestly, you've got to believe me. I left my lighter here this afternoon. I was afraid the police would find it. Naturally, I can't afford any bad publicity. It'll ruin my career.
I believe you, Buck. You always were fond of that career, weren't you? Don't answer, just keep quiet.
What's up?
A guy named Seema, if I'm right. Shh. Since Reginald Dix didn't like him. Wait a minute. I think I hear someone coming along the hall. The door slowly opened and closed again. The dim light from the hall showed the form of another man. Then the dark figure moved slowly but surely across the room. It stopped for a second or two, as though listening for something. Then moved again to the balcony, out onto the balcony, and whoever it was grabbed the ledge above, hoisted his feet up onto the iron grillwork, and hung over the city. That's when I acted. Okay, Ames, stay right where you are, in that position.
What? You think I'm a fool?
Candy's out on that ledge. He's ducked around the outside on that ledge.
I'm a fool. Quick, Buff, go down the hall and get out on the fire escape. Cut him off.
Okay, what are you going to do?
Go out on that ledge after him. You better come back, Ames. You're cut off at both ends.
Oh, no, I'm not. Not with this gun I've got.
That's the same gun you killed Dix with, isn't it? Very clever hiding it up on this ledge out here. No wonder Mallard and his boys didn't find it. Look out there on the city, Ames. One misstep and you go off into space. Think it over. You better come back.
Not on your life.
I'm coming after you.
I'm down at the other end, Candy.
Good. Now we've got him.
Yes. Yes, you have. Obviously, this is the end. Perhaps you don't know what it is to love. Perhaps you don't know what it is to be scorned. I do, painfully so. This is the end. But I'm not gonna go alone. You're going with me, Miss Matson, like this.
No! No, the recoil, it'll knock you right out of the head.
Oh!
So it was just a matter of jealousy. Is that right, Candy?
That's right, Mellor, dear. The same thing you developed when you walked in on Buff Arnold and me.
Okay, so I was burned up. Tell me more.
It was the name Seema that did it, Mellor. Do you know what that is?
All right, I'll play quizzes with you. What's the name Seema?
Seema is Ames, spelled backwards.
Uh-oh.
You see, that was Ames' real name. At one time, he had married Cherry Dana under the name of Seema. When she began to be big in pictures, she divorced him, but he carried the eternal torch.
Silly, she wasn't worth it.
Of course not. Because she collected men. Reginald Dix, not because she loved him, but because she was fading in pictures and because Dix was the only one who could keep her in front of the public.
Logical. But what about the Seema hung up in the tree on Telegraph Hill?
Uh-huh. There we have the plot. The Seema up in the tree was Ames's brother, a ne'er-do-well. The night that Ames arrived in town here, he looked up his brother, got a bit tight, and told him what he'd done. Caused the original leading man to disappear, shoved the original assistant director off a platform, breaking his legs, in general, did everything he could to sabotage the picture. Then he pulled the strings to get himself named as assistant director so he could be near Cherry.
Love and jealousy.
Mallard, I'll get to that in time. Cherry had vaguely promised that she'd remarry Ames. But when he saw his own brother was going to blackmail him, he went crazy. That's when he strung him up with the dummies in the trees. From there, it was just a step to knock off Reginald Dix and have a clear track for himself.
Well, I'll go back to what I said to begin with. Why did these characters from Hollywood have to come up here to San Francisco and louse up our scenery, as well as our police department?
Oh, to heck with your police department. That's the last time I'm going to climb around a ledge hundreds of feet in the air.
Not so strange. Buff Arnold was out on that ledge, too, wasn't he?
Oh, Mallard, sometimes you make me... That reminds me, I have a date tomorrow night.
Sure, with Buff Arnold.
No, that's tomorrow morning. I'm driving him down to the railroad station. Date for tomorrow night? With you, Mellor, dear. We're going to see a Roy Acuff movie.
Oh, Candy. Roy Acuff. Monarch of all the cowboys.
Yeah, monarch of all the cowboys. I'll see him with you. Oh. And if that isn't love, I don't know what is.
Listen again next week at this same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Hal Burdick as Reginald Dix, John Grover as Ames, the assistant director, Mary Milford as Cherry Dana, Kurt Martell as Buff Arnold, and included in the cast was Ken Langley. Henry Left plays the part of Lieutenant Ray Mallard. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and directed by Monty Masters. Sound effects are created by Bill Brownell, and Eloise Rowan is heard at the organ. The characters in tonight's play were entirely fictitious. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. Tonight's engineer was Clarence Stevens. The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Okay, The Movie Company, an episode of Candy Matson. That was the 10th episode. Original air date was the 29th of August, 1950. If you were just listening, you could probably deduce it was somewhere in the 1950s because of the Korean War references. I started the show by saying, starring Natalie Parks. She was actually married to the writer, director, and producer, so they credit her as Natalie Masters. She might or might not have gotten married during the show. I don't know. During the show's airing from the 29th of June, 1949, to the 20th of May, 1951. It's time for Digital George and Henry.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Safety. WMFO Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Henry. Again, for the second half of the show, part of a double billing of episode 10s, I'm going to have the 10th episode of Frontier Gentlemen. This is titled The Powder River Kid. Its original air date was the 6th of April, 1958. The new schedules are coming out, presumably soon. I don't know if the Grand Hour is going to maintain its 6 to 7 time slot. When it does, when it is decided, I'm going to return back to the six shooter as the Western choice for the semester. I have about half a season left to play on that one, even though I'm starting to like old J.B. Kendall here. out in Montana territory. Seems though he's gotten away from his wanting to interview Sitting Bull. But, hey, I can't write those things.
There seem to be only two kinds of people in Montana Territory, the good and the bad. Sometimes it's hard to tell which is which. Frontier Gentlemen. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall. Frontier Gentlemen. Receive an offer of transportation in a wagon. So I sold my horse and we set out on the Mullen Road. My companion, or bullwhacker as he called himself, was a leathery, stringy chap who might have been 50 or 70. It was hard to tell. His name was George Scales, and he seemed more than happy to have someone to talk to.
Yes, sir, I was one of the first out of the California Gold Rush. Went out with my father in 49. How old do you figure I am, boy?
Well,
58. Wouldn't think it, would you?
Well,
58. Never had a sick day in my life. Been married 3 times, buried 2. The 3rd got took by Apache down in Arizona Territory. I pity the poor son of a gun Indian that's hooked up with her. Boy, she was the meanest piece of calico you ever set eyes on. It was a lucky day for me. You married?
No,
You take my advice, boy. What'd you say your name was?
Kendall.
Kendall. You ain't kin to the Brown County, Texas Kendalls, are you?
No.
Well, come to think of it, their name wasn't Kendall, it was Pridgen. Now, how come you figure I misremembered that? What was we talking about?
I'm not quite sure.
Now, you take my father. 86 years old, 2 weeks back. I'm taking him home to bury him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, anything for sorrow. All got to go up Salt River sometime. Old Buzzard's been out in California better than 30 years. That ain't no place for a man to sack his saddle, so last trip out, I said, Paul, I got to take you back to Kentucky, because when you bite the dust, it ain't fit to do it in this here place. That's what I said.
I see.
Well, we got us a place in Kentucky. Figure you ought to rest comfortable there.
Well, did he die on the way from California?
If he did, since you got on back in Helena, the old Buzzard ain't dead yet. He's asleep in the wagon.
Oh.
Eats and sleeps. Ain't much else to do, I guess. Old Buzzard, deep as a post. When he wakes up, you just say hello, smile at him, and he'll think that's just fine. Oh, you want a chaw?
No, thank you.
You don't talk much, do you?
No, I suppose not.
What's your business?
I'm a newspaper correspondent.
Writer?
Yes.
Newspaper fodder, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Had me a run-in with one of your kind back in 62, maybe 63. I was a mule skinner with Major McCleave down in Apache country. You ever been down there?
No.
Mean, surely mean country. Ain't cutting for nothing.
Hey.
Hey, the old Buzzard woke up.
Everything's fine, Paul. I'm happy.
Oh, you ain't never nothing but, Paul. Got a way to go yet, Paul? Hey, this here's Mr. Kendall. He got on in Helena.
How do you do, Mr. Scales?
Don't matter what you say, just talking loud.
I understand you're going back to Kentucky.
I just stayed there.
What is he saying?
There's no telling. You go on back to sleep, you old buzzard. I'll tell you when it's time to eat. He's going to do it. Guess he didn't like you.
Oh?
Paul meets a stranger, he'll chalk your ear off. Talkingest man I ever seen. If he don't take you, he does what I tell him. I get an audio, he'll keep his mouth shut now, or you get off in the bed.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no cause, no cause. Man can't help what he is. I just hope you ain't like that sheep-killing dog of a newspaper fella I was telling you about. I sure did sharpen my hoe on him.
Well, whatever he did, I assure you, I'll be very careful not to make the same mistake.
Newspaper fella.
At midday, we stopped for our meal. Scale, Senior, and Junior kept up an extraordinary conversation, during which time I was completely ignored. The pair reminded me a little of Dickensian characters, a certain gentleman and his aged parent. After his food, the aged parent clambered back into the wagon and presumably went back to sleep as we continued on our way. An offering of tobacco mellowed Scales somewhat, and I felt that possibly I might be forgiven for my sin by association. It was late that afternoon when we saw the three riders. They were halted by the side of the road.
If you know how to use that gun of yours, Kendall, you better be ready to reach.
You think they're outlaws?
Man's bone seasoned. He don't take chances, not in these parts.
Looks as though one of them is hurt.
Well, that's a fact. Well, I'll be a hoy-belly stump sucker. A woman. One's a woman. Look at that. If that don't beat all. Whoa! Whoa! Hey, you got trouble?
Haven't got any medicines, have you?
No, got some whiskey.
It's my husband. He's hurt kind of bad.
There ain't nothing, I tell you, Dora.
Just let me rest a while. We'll get on.
You ain't gonna make it,
Bill. Shut up. Mister, I'll buy your whiskey. That'll fix me.
No such thing. It isn't whiskey you need. Either of you gents know about doctrine?
No, ma'am.
I know a little, not much.
Let him take a look, Bill. Jack, here, come on. Give him a hand down.
You know, Kendall, I got a feeling I know that fella. I've seen him, but I ain't sure where.
Why don't you bring the whiskey out, Mr. Scales? He looks as if he can use it.
All right. Yeah.
Here, get your jacket off, Bill.
Easy, woman, now take it easy.
Oh, man, that sure looks wicked. You better sit down. There's the rock over there.
Yeah.
Hold on. When did it happen?
3 days ago.
Did you get the bullet out?
No.
I'm all right, I tell you. Just let me rest.
You're not all right. That's gangrene, the shoulder and arm. There's a doctor in Helena. It won't take you more than 3 hours to get there.
We ain't going to Helena, mister. We're going to Fort Benton.
But that's over 100 miles. You've already got a fever. If I were you,
I'd... ain't me.
Oh, Bill, he's right. Now, please, let's go back.
No.
I think I could remove the bullet, but that won't help.
You ain't no doctor.
Hey, pour some of this panther juice in your gizzard. Cure everything from the rattles to...
Well, ain't gonna cure that.
Give me the bottle. Take a good big slug, Bill.
Hey, don't I know him someplace?
Not likely to, mister.
I ain't never forgot a face. I swear I seen his. Mind if I ask your name? I'm obliged for your whiskey. Yeah, we'll be moving on.
Oh, Bill, what good is it going to be? You're sick. You can't ride all that way. I do like he said.
Dora, you heard what I said. Come on.
Oh, Bill.
He fainted. We carried him to the wagon, put him inside. The aged parent woke up, smiled pleasantly at the newcomers, and watched with interest as the wife and the one called Jack did what they could to make the wounded man comfortable. I felt a tug at my sleeve. Scales drew me away from the wagon.
I know him. I remember. Right. I know who he is. I'll never forget a man's face. Only difference now, he ain't got that mustache he used to wear. Right. The Powder River Kid, Bill Logan, that's who. Oh, ain't you got no savvy? The Powder River Kid. He's wanted in more territories than even James Boys. Oh, I've seen the posters. There's $2,000 reward for him, dead or alive. Well, what do you say? Make pretty good sharings, huh? Muy dinero, 1,000 for you, 1,000 for me.
Of course, his wife and his friend might have something to say about that.
Then we shoot him. Sure, shoot him now, and then we take the kid on into Benton and collect.
I don't think he'll live that long, not without a doctor.
Who's talking about alive? Posters say live or dead.
No, I didn't.
If we think of it,
the,
we would be better off when we shot him. Might save a sack full of trouble. I seen him draw once, down in Virginia City, was. He fanned two men down so quick he had his gun back in the holster before they hit the girl.
Mister,
Yes. Coming.
Hey, other fellers getting out of the wagon, too.
We go to Joe?
No.
He's still unconscious. Mister, you said you could take out the bullet. Maybe it'd do some good.
There's too much poison. He's got one chance, and that's to take him back to Helena.
Is this your wagon, Mr. Kendall?
No, ma'am. It's mine, George Scales.
Mr. Scales, I'll pay you $200 if you'll turn around. Take us back to Helena.
Well, now, that's a mighty attractive offer.
I don't know, Dory. Bill said...
I don't care what he said. Right now, he's dying.
No, I ain't. Mr., my wife offers you $200 to take me back to Helena. You let me rest a while in your wagon till I'm fit to ride the other way. I'll make it $300.
That's fair. Yes, sir, that's a fair deal. I'll do that. Make yourself to home. The old buzzard's my paw. If he talks at you too much, just better good and loud. Go to sleep, you old buzzard.
You ride in here with me, Dory. Jack, stay on your horse.
Sure, Bill. Just take it easy.
All right, boys, let's bounce.
Idea to camp pretty soon.
Bet the Powder River kid thinks so. This trail ain't the softest. Hey, how long you figure till he hangs up his hat?
I don't know. But I wouldn't worry about it.
I ain't worrying. River knows some thinking. How come you suppose he don't want to go back to Helena?
Somebody's after him, I imagine.
That's my guess. If somebody's a U.S. Marshal and that Marshal finds him before the kid dies, you figure maybe we'll have to cut another share on the reward?
A fine legal point.
Well, I ain't gonna worry. Dark coming on. Hey, the lights are looking clearing up the road. Yeah, I gotta feed the old buzzard. Hey!
After the supper, I walked away from the camp to a rise overlooking the Missouri. There were flashes of lightning in the east, and you could see the outline of heavy black clouds, but there hadn't been any rain yet. I stood for about 10 minutes smoking my pipe. Then I heard steps behind me.
Scale said you come up this way.
How's your husband?
Oh, I think the fever's worse. Will he make it?
I'm not a doctor.
You don't have to be.
You should have gone back to Helena.
He couldn't. He was afraid to. Scales knows who he is, doesn't he? You know.
Yes.
There's been a marshal trailing us for 6 months. He caught up with Bill and Helena. My brother Jack helped him get away, and we hid out in town for 3 days.
Well, why didn't you get a doctor?
Oh, he wouldn't let us. There's a reward. Bill was afraid a doctor'd try and collect. Just like your friend wants to.
He is pretty obvious, isn't he?
Oh, man's luck runs out. Coyotes started snapping for the leavings. Me and Bill was on our way to Benton before the marshal caught up with him. We figured on going back east.
Were you and your brother both working with Logan?
No. And Bill hasn't done anything wrong since we was married. Mr. Kendall, I'll tell you a straight thing. I haven't been with a man like you'd call a decent woman. Most of my life, I've been a wild one. But not since Bill.
I wish I could help Mrs. Logan.
I really come to ask you to... I saw it done once before with a man's leg that got like Bill's arm. They cut it off.
Yes, I thought of that. Too late. The poison's in his shoulder. It wouldn't do any good. I'm sorry.
A preacher out in Utah married us. He'd never heard of the Powder River Kid. He thought we was nice folks. Well, I better get back to the camp.
With her. Jack was with Logan in the wagon. Scale's father was sitting on his haunches by the campfire, sucking on a piece of root candy and whittling a sliver of wood. He rocked
leaned against a tree, ruminating on a piece of tobacco. He beckoned to me.
What'd she want?
She wanted me to cut off his arm.
That's a woman for you. Came to do it?
No. Wouldn't do any good. Probably kill him.
You sure wouldn't think he was a gunslinger, would you? Not now you wouldn't. Sick and whimpering like a dying pup.
You think we could go on tonight?
Not on this trail. With the rains coming, no, sir. Besides, the old buzzard don't like traveling in the dark. Yeah, hope he don't keep that up all night. None of us will get any shut eye.
Anything I can do, Jack?
No.
He's sick to the head right now. Come on, no, Dory.
Honey, don't.
Dory says you know about us. We figured so. You're all right, Kendall. My sister does, too. But I want to tell you not to start thinking about that reward. A few minutes later, it began to rain and continued intermittently all through the night. But the dawn was clear and bright. It took the combined efforts of oxen, horses, and men to take the wagon back onto the trail. The wheels had sunk nearly hub-deep in mud. But as the sun rose, we were on our way northward again. Bill Logan was no longer delirious, but in the grayness of his face, I knew that he didn't have long to live. It was during the early afternoon that his wife called out to me.
Mr. Kendall?
Yes?
Will you come back a minute?
All right. Maybe he's dead, huh?
Maybe.
He wants to talk to you.
Sorry, go on up with that bull whacker. What I got to say is private.
Make him stay quiet.
Come over closer, will you? The old man asleep.
Yes.
Now listen, I'm finished. I ain't a doctor. Nothing gonna help me now. I'm feeling. Now, I never asked a favor. No man in my life. I'm asking one now.
What is it?
There's a reward for me. It ain't much, only $2,000, but it means something for Dory. I ain't gonna pay no reward for a man that's died natural like. Or if they do like us, not go to that Marshall fella for starting me off. I want you to fix it so Dory can get it.
Well, how?
You fill me full of lead.
Shoot you?
Yeah, shoot me.
No.
I trust you. You see, I trust you to give the money to Dory.
You're out of your head.
No, mister. I ain't last night, but not now. It's the best I can do for her. She's a good woman. Now, let me give her something so she don't have to go back to what she was.
Now, I can't kill you.
You got a right to. Look, I'm wanted, Kendall. I've done more killings than I can remember. It ain't a wrong thing for you to do. You could say I was trying to escape.
No, I can't.
If not drawn,
it doesn't make any difference. We both know you wouldn't shoot. I'm sorry. I don't think he felt very much pain after that. He just drank Scales whiskey and talked quietly to his wife. He died just before the sun went down.
Well, I guess he's dead now.
I think so.
You figure she'll want to take him into Benton or bury him out here?
I don't know.
Sure does seem a shame and a sin to see that reward go up in smoke.
Perhaps it doesn't have to.
How do you mean? How come?
I could ride back to Helena. Wouldn't take more than a few hours.
What good does that do?
And I'd take him back with me.
Well?
All you have to do is to see that they don't try to stop me.
Listen, boy, for $1,000, nobody's going to stop you. The old buzzard's still spry enough to hold a gun. I just have to tell him who to point it at, is all. Hey, how do I know you'd come back?
Well, I imagine you'll just have to take my word for it.
Ain't never trusted a newspaper feller yet, but I guess there ain't no choice.
I give you my word of honor. I'll come back.
All right. Oh, curry's in there, too. Why, ain't gonna be nothing to it. All right, Curry, you keep your hands high. Both of you get over to the other side of the wagon. The Powder River Kid's going back to Helena.
Scales shouted instructions to his father, who disarmed the dead man and Curry, then held a gun steady, a smile on his old face, head nodding approvingly. I took Logan's body out of the wagon and tied it onto a horse. Just before I rode away, I saw Mrs. Logan watching me, crying, a soundless, terrible cry. I must have traveled 10 miles in the night before I found the courage to do what I had to do. I led the horses off the road, tethered them, and took down Logan's body. He looked peaceful. Forgive me, Logan. Delivered the body to the marshal in Helena and collected $2,000 reward for the capture and killing of Bill Logan, alias the Powder River Kid. Then I took the horses and rode back to where I'd left the wagon.
Did you get it, boy? Did you get the money?
I got it.
One of these days, I'm going to catch up with you, mister.
Get on your horse. You too, Mrs. Logan. Go on.
One of these days.
That was fine, boy. Fine. Now, come on. Let's divvy up.
Afraid not, Mr. Scales. I've got some bad news for you. You are getting nothing.
What?
Exactly. Drop your gun, or the old buzzard's going to lose his son.
Oh. I might have known. Just like the other one. A stinking, no good, low down.
Goodbye,
paper
Mr. Scales. It's been a most unpleasant association. I took Logan's horse and caught up with Mrs. Logan and her brother a little further along the Mullen Road. I gave her the $2,000, and together we rode on into Fort Benton, Montana Territory.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Joe Kearns, Paula Winslow, Larry Dobkin, Barney Phillips, and Robert Roudier. Music was composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch.
Frontier Gentlemen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Episode 10, Powder River Kid of the Frontier Gentleman. Original air date was the 6th of April, 1958. I want to thank the caller who called, and possibly you got to hear on the air because I forgot how to answer the phones correctly, but I'm told I could hear me talking. The caller pointed out some of the northeast vernacular of the wicked gunshot wound. It's kind of interesting, some of these dramas, some of the language they use. They were kind of limited. Had to make the best out of the writing. Anthony Ellis seemed to do that pretty good. Sort of Jack Johnstone with the six-shooter.